Nigeria, but they said there are immediate solutions that can bring relief.
Nigeria is for Nigerians, so every Nigerian should benefit. So if the people want subsidy, they should reinstate that very particular subsidy. Or we fix our refineries. It's even dubious that today we are producing oil, but we subject the sales of our oil to American dollar, price them in dollar.
Pockets of protests over the economic hardship have started springing up in some Nigerian cities. Meanwhile, the Nigerian Labour Congress has called for a two-day nationwide strike on 27 and 28 February in protest over the rising cost of living.
The Nigerian government has promised to take proactive steps to mitigate the economic problems people are facing. Experts, however, say the government should first solve the persistent insecurity in Nigeria to be able to focus on agriculture for food security. They also say human capacity must be developed so that the Nigerian population becomes an asset instead of a liability. Danjuma Abdullahi, Abuja.
As the assault on Gaza escalates again with the death toll since October 7 nearing 30,000, pro-Palestinian protests are gaining momentum in Canada. During nationwide rallies, protesters criticized Prime Minister Justin Trudeau for his inaction.
Palestinian.
On the cusp of the Israeli invasion of the southernmost city of Gaza, Rafah, the people of take to the streets, joining cities across Canada, calling on their government to take measures to stop Israel's genocide of the Palestinian people.
I'm here to ask for ceasefire right now. Enough is enough. It has been taking a long time for our government to stand up and call for ceasefire. This is not the right way to do it. We have to get arms embargo.
I'm at a loss for words, to be honest, but what's going on, it's the end of the line. It's a death camp, and we want to, again, pressure our politicians, pressure our communities, hands off Rafah.
Although the government of Canada has called for a ceasefire, demonstrators noted that since October, Ottawa has approved $28.5 million of military exports to Israel. They see this, along with the refusal of the Canadian government to call the assault on Gaza genocide, tantamount to a stab in the back of the public's demands. Robert N. Lakesh, Calgary.
Tens of thousands of farmers are standing their ground on the outskirts of New Delhi ahead of planned crucial talks. The Farmers' March comes 2 years after similar protests that lasted for a year against new agricultural reforms that were later scrapped by the government of Premier Modi. As general elections are due in the coming months, the farmers are mounting pressure on the government, demanding legislation that would guarantee minimum support price for their produce.
We are protesting to guarantee prices for our crops. The previous government had schemes in support of farmers, but the present government is making laws which are against farmers and not acceptable to us. They want to sell India's agriculture sector to corporations, but we will protest till our demands are met.
The protesting farmers are mostly from the neighboring state of Punjab and Haryana. They say rising cultivation costs and debts have led them to increase their production of crops. Therefore, a guaranteed minimum support price for their produce would stabilize their income. They're also demanding the government fulfill its election pledge to double farmers' income and waive their loans and withdraw any legal case filed against them during earlier protest.
This government wants to destroy us. All the promises before elections turned futile. We want debt waivers, pensions for farmers and laborers, and the withdrawal of all legal cases filed against protesting farmers during the 2021 March. We are peacefully marching towards the capital, but the government is using tear gas to stop us as if we are outsiders. But we will fight till our demands are fulfilled.
Since the march started, several meetings between leaders of farmers and government ministers have ended inconclusively. The ministers of Modi's government, however, expect a peaceful solution. The two sides are expected to meet soon, as Prime Minister Modi has already said his government is working on more inclusive schemes to benefit farmers. His party also claims to have already doubled the minimum support price from 1,000 to 2,000 Indian rupees, a claim that farmers deny. The protests come at a time when the country is gearing up for general elections in few months' time. The farmers are seen as an important section of the voting population. Experts say Modi is expected to secure a third term, despite the protest. They say it is, however, crucial to strike a deal with the protesting farmers to secure a long-term solution, since successive governments have failed to appease them.
Most of the vital roads leading to the capital, New Delhi, have been fortified, like this one. And massive barricades have been erected across all sides of the border to make sure the protesters are confined to outside the city. Tens of thousands of farmers are camping just a few miles away from the capital. They say they will keep marching to the capital unless there is a breakthrough in negotiations. Munawar Zaman, New Delhi.
Anger in the streets of London. Another mass protest. A turnout of hundreds of thousands. Veteran campaigners, young activists, British Jewish groups.
It's the fourth national demonstration of the year and the second one to end outside the Israeli embassy here in London. And their message, these protesters say, is clear. Stop the genocide now.
That's what they have been demanding for more than 4 months now. And the impending Israeli incursion into the southern Gaza city of Rafah, that shelters more than 1.5 million Palestinians, accounts for today's turnout, one of the largest since it all began.
We're watching these messages, we're watching these videos of people getting slaughtered on a daily basis, but we're not insensitized to this. The Western media, the Western world is desensitized to this. We won't. We will stand for our Palestinian brothers and sisters in Gaza, in the West Bank, wherever, to get rid of this cancer that is Zionism, and we're going to fight until the day that Palestine is free.
A free Palestine is yet to come. But there is a chance for British politicians to stop the ongoing mass slaughter. On February 21st, MPs, representatives of the British public, will be voting on a second ceasefire motion. The first such vote, November last year, didn't pass muster. We asked Ben Jamal of the Palestine Solidarity Campaign what message a no vote would send to the Palestinians.
It will deliver a message to the Palestinian people that the British Parliament says your lives don't matter. The message we've delivered today is that they do matter to the British people, and that now the British Parliament needs to start listening to what the British people are saying.
The political party's position on Israel's genocidal war on Gaza has taken center stage in this year's upcoming general elections in the UK. And the protesters here say it determines which way their vote will go. Saeed Purizza, London.
Supporters of the jailed Pakistani former Premier Imran Khan and his party, Pakistan Tehreek-e-Insaf or PTI, held nationwide protests on Saturday to condemn alleged manipulation in the February 8 general election.
The mandate that the people of Pakistan has given the independent, so-called independent candidates, backed by none other than PTI, because our election symbol was taken away, our entire leadership is behind jails with sham, aapke jo mukadmaat hai. So this doesn't make any sense. When the people have spoken, they have to be respected. Otherwise, they will be on the street, it will be chaos, and no government, no political party will be able to rule.
Supporters of Imran Khan's party insist that widespread electoral manipulation has deprived their party of achieving 2/3 majority in the parliament.
I voted for Imran Khan, but I'm speaking as a Pakistani voter. I voted, I was there at 7:45 in the morning. I wanted to be first in line so that I could vote. By evening, our candidate was winning, everything was fine. 3 in the morning, suddenly the man lost, and he lost by 20,000 votes or God knows something like that. How is this possible? This is not possible and this is not acceptable.
However, Imran Khan's rival political group, Pakistan Muslim League Nawaz, says the PTI party tried to derail democracy by creating controversy around elections. A dramatic change in the political climate occurred when the commissioner of Rawalpindi, a city in northern Pakistan, tendered his resignation, citing a guilty conscience for his role in enabling widespread electoral manipulation in the garrison city.
We converted the losers into winners with 70,000 votes margin. The chief election commissioner and chief justice are involved in poll fraud. I accept all the responsibility. I should be hanged. I cannot participate in the crime that could destroy Pakistan.
This is while Pakistan's election commission has rejected claims made by the Rawalpindi commissioner, stating that no official of the electoral body gave any direction to him regarding the manipulation of results.
The outcry over alleged vote rigging in the recently held elections for national and state legislatures has sparked widespread protests among multiple political factions. Analysts warn that the absence of a clear mandate for any political party could lead to prolonged political instability and hinder efforts to address economic challenges of the country. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
Supplication on Saturdays. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Bismillah, words that seekers of sanctuary repeatedly recite, words that the very cautious in search of protection often repeat. I seek refuge with Allah, the Exalted above all, from the oppression of the unjust, from the deceitful malice the envious use to lay snares and traps, from the injustice and outrage of the tyrants, and I sing his praise. Do better and go beyond other praisers. O Allah, thou art one, has no partner, and is the Lord and Master without being made. There is no discrepancy or nonsense in thy commands, nor there is lawlessness in thy kingdom. I beseech thee to send blessings on Muhammad, thy servant, thy messenger. To let me ask thee for enlightenment and inspiration, so as to be thankful for thy bounties, which alone get thy approval ultimately. To help me to obey thee and instinctively worship thee, and make me deserve thy rewards on account of thy very patronage. And have mercy on me and prevent me from breaking in the bounds of thy prohibitions as far as I am kept alive, and show the way unto that which is useful and advantageous till I go on survive. To let me take to heart the meanings of thy book, and by its reading, throw down the heavy burden of sins and receive welfare and salvation as a gift. Let not my family and friends who love me leave me alone. Let thy favors reach me in abundance during the remainder of my life, exactly as they used to be made available for me in full in the days gone by. O, the Most Merciful.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sesley. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Almost 4.5 months later, the so-called civilized world continues to watch the Israeli regime's genocide of Palestinians in Gaza without stopping it. Besides bombs targeting the kids in tents, children are passing out from hunger, with some literally dying from hunger. There's still little food, little clean water, few supplies, no electricity, no fuel, and nowhere safe to go. The nightmare continues, and the majority of the world allows it, except for the axis of resistance. Well, let me get our guests in on this program. I'd like to welcome them. Out of Belfast, author and West Asia expert, Saeb Shaath. And Peter Ford, former British ambassador to Syria, out of London. Well, thank you both for being with me on this spotlight. I'd like to start off in Belfast. And Saeb, at least 28,500 Palestinians have been killed in Gaza, and now 1.5 million people are in Rafah, the most populated place on earth that Israel has been bombing and threatening a ground invasion. Your perspective, what is the Israeli regime's goal at this point in time?
The Israeli regime's goal is the Zionist project's goal from the beginning, to create Eretz Israel, a greater Israel. And they want to cleanse the Palestinian people out of the Gaza Strip. They're trying to do it in a way which is will look like the pandemic got them, starvation and hunger got the people, and voluntarily they went and they broke, made a hole in the Egyptian fence at the border in Rafah, near Rafah crossing, which they call it the Philadelphia corridor. And that's the ideal scenarios which the Zionist entity genocidal war planning for from the beginning. They want to push them in a way they just want to run for their lives. And that's what they doing. They want to create the nightmare scenario for the Egyptians and for the Palestinians as well. At the beginning, when they were saying, they asked the United Nations help to move the Palestinians out of Rafah. The United Nations officials repeatedly told them, there is no safe place in Gaza, and we cannot help in creating waves of refugees out of the Gaza Strip. That's what they were attacking the United Nations all along. They wanted now the United Nations to help them in creating another Nakba, as their officials called it at the beginning of their attacks in Gaza last October, when they called it Nakba 2023. This is the design, and this is coming on the back of yesterday the Wall Street Journal. They stated from sources in the United States of America, Joe Biden sent them tons of ammunition and weaponry and state-of-art weaponry, plus the money which is the Congress, of course, released for them. And we know till now, Joe Biden bypassed Congress twice to arm the Zionist entity to continue its genocide. They throw a smoke screen at the international community, saying they're trying to tell Netanyahu to be gentle in the way with the Palestinians people in Rafah. I can't believe what the United States of America comes out of with, and the Western leaders come out with. They are up to their neck in the genocide.
Well, let's look at that, Peter. The Israeli regime has no red line. What about its supporters in the West? Do you think there's a red line that they will not let the Zionists cross in this ethnic cleansing campaign against the Palestinian nation? Because as Saab said, I mean, again, recently, the United States again gave more weapons, more money. So is there a red line, you think, for them, for the Zionist regime or not?
I believe, unfortunately, there is no red line. Experience so far suggests that the main Western powers, America, Britain, Germany, have an infinite appetite for Palestinian suffering. And there are literally no limits to Palestinian suffering which they can endure. This is embarrassing them with their public opinion. And we saw today in London and other capitals huge demonstrations, popular demonstrations against governments and politicians. But at the end of the day, they will not do what is actually necessary. The Americans are ready.
Okay, unfortunately, we've lost Peter. Hopefully, we'll be able to reestablish that connection. Let me cross back over to Belfast and Saab. Let's look at the reasons for the complicity of these Western countries in not only allowing the regime to do whatever it wants, but basically, well, it seems like we have lost, unfortunately, it seems right now that we have lost our connection with both Belfast and London. And hopefully we'll get to reestablish that as we continue our discussions on the situation of what is happening on the ground still, as we have now gone more than almost four and a half months of this genocide. And we're talking about at least 28,500 people being killed. But of course, estimates say that it's over 30,000, perhaps way over 30,000, as still it is believed that thousands of people are still under the rubble, and thousands perhaps of others, their bodies have been buried in mass graves or even decomposed at this point in time. This major tragedy that is taking place on the ground right now in Rafah, that basically symbolizes what has been happening not only for this 4.5 months, but in reality, we have seen this take place for 75 years against the Palestinian nation. And now it has reached a point as for a starvation that individuals, they're saying, fathers are saying, that at night they actually tie stones to the stomach of their kids and their own and their family. So the hunger pains are less painful. Now, this is the reality that we are now dealing with in Gaza as the whole world continues to watch. I'm going to cross back over to Belfast, and I have Saab back. I believe I have both of you back. Thank you so much. Sorry about that technical difficulty, viewers. But back to Saab now. The reasons, in your perspective, Saab, for the complicity of these Western countries in allowing the regime, not just allowing them, but enhancing this genocide to take place, what do they get out of it?
I believe myself, this is the deep state in the United States of America, the intelligence services and the deep state. They want the Zionist entity to continue, and the West behind them, to continue with the genocide. It's an issue to do with their hegemony in West Asia as well, which is, I always want to emphasize this point. If they lose the battle in Gaza, that's what the West believe, then the Zionist entity will be the project of creating this outpost, Zionist entity there to hegemonize the region while they are busy tackling Russia and tackling China. If we notice the package from the Congress came for three countries, Ukraine, Taiwan, and the Zionist entity. That's what shows where is the global battle of the deep state, the United States of America and its mad dogs in the West, or the Zionist entity. So if they lose this battle, if they lose the creating again the deterrence and the balance and shifting the balance of power as used to be before, then they will lose West Asia. And if they lose West Asia, it will implicate badly on their battle against China especially, because they cannot control the growth of the Chinese. They cannot control after that the balance of power with the Russians and with the Chinese. So they see it vital to take the mask off and show they are actually mean genocide in doing in Gaza. And that's why the whole countries in the region, if in even West Asia, all of it, they have to line up behind the Zionist entity, behind the Palestinian resistance. And if the Palestinian resistance lose this battle, which they are not on the ground, they are winning, but the heavy price they are making them pay, the Zionist entity and the West, is with the, to do with the civilians, because the resistance is job to implicate casualty and make the occupation pay heavy prices. It cannot protect the civilian infrastructure and the population, which is the duty of the Arabic countries.
Okay, stay with me on that, because we're going to get back to that point. But Peter, your take on what Saeb has said. I mean, is this basically this war of ideologies that is taking place? I mean, you are a former British official, political official. Your assessment of really what is going on and what is at stake for these Western countries to be so basically black and white with this, no matter what the Israeli regime does, it still gets 100% support from them.
First of all, the government concerned, Britain, America, Germany, France, are not paying a heavy price for the support that they're giving Israel. It's an easy political choice for them because they are not paying a very visible price. Of course, there is a price. For example, the blockade on trade in the Red Sea is actually hitting the British economy, but people don't know that. They don't realize. So governments think that this is, they get a free pass. There's no penalty to support Israel to the hilt. And I just want to stress that this is about domestic politics very much. Forget the geopolitics. When I was a diplomat, we would talk about the geopolitics, but the politicians were much more interested in the domestic politics, and that's what's going on here. In the case of Britain, the government is enjoying the support of its core right-wing nationalist supporters. And at the moment, it's suffering a lot, the British government, on many fronts, but at least it needs to placate its core nationalist far-right supporters. That's what support.
Well, what about, Peter, sorry to jump in here, what about, you stated earlier that today was another large demonstration as more and more people actually show their support for the Palestinians. I mean, how does that affect the British public policy? Go ahead.
Yeah, it's a good question, but the answer is that the people who are marching are not people who are going to vote for the Conservative government anyway. They can be discounted. They'll vote for other parties. This is a foregone conclusion. So the government reckon that they're not paying a political cost. But if they did the moral thing, if they did the sensible thing for British interests, which would be to call for an immediate ceasefire, then they would pay a heavy price they would lose many of their far right, often racist supporters. And they would also lose the support of half of the media, the not social media, obviously, but legacy mainstream media, much of which is solidly behind Israel. And thirdly, they would lose financial support from the supporters of Israel, the business people who are backing the most extreme racist policies.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Saab, you had mentioned about the Muslim countries in the region. Let's look at some of the complicity of Muslim and Arab nations in this genocide against the Palestinian. First of all, which countries would you say are working hand in hand with the Israeli regime or helping the Israeli regime, and why would they do that? What are they getting out of this?
There is lots of countries. I want to just mention one line coming from India through the Emirates, through Saudi Arabia, through Jordan, and going and supplying all the logistic what's needed by the Zionist entity to cancel, in a way, the battle, the brave Yemeni people showing at the Red Sea. This is part of it, but they are not succeeding. These countries, if we want to adjust historical back, little bit of historical background, these countries are created as what we call the Arab Zionists, and they are linked together with the Zionist entity. The Emiratis and the Saudis and the Jordanian are all of this creation when the British designed this entity. And these as buffer zone and the protectors of the Zionist entity. Once the Zionist regime collapses in Palestine, these regimes will go. This is what they know. So they know their existence is linked to that. They don't buy into Arabism or Islam or whatever. They buy into this regime's who are ruling there. These people who's ruling over the Emirates or Saudi Arabia were Bedouin tribes. The British picked them and put meat out of them, prince and royal families, and told them as long as they look after the interest of the British, which is now as well translated into the American Empire, you will be the ruling families in there. Once you get out of line, we'll replace you. And I don't want to go into stories in there, but this is obvious. So this is the benefit of these countries, and always, always work against the Palestinian liberation movement or the Arab project of unifying the Arab world as a one entity during Nasser regime in Egypt. Because if the Arabs succeeded in building one Arabic country, it will be very costly for the Americans or for any Western regime to attack any Arab world. And so will be very easy for them to cleanse the Zionist entity with this satanic project out of Palestine. So this is where the problem is. A lot of people in the region don't get it, don't understand the benefit of these royal families. With a king of Jordan, he cannot even object to what the American base is doing or to what the Zionist entity require from him through Jordan. He signed the Jordanian 1994 peace deal with the Zionist entity for what? They handed over in 1967 the West Bank and Jerusalem. They didn't have any kind of the clashes. It's all cover up for beefing up the Zionist entity and protecting it. So they are part of the project, part of what the Americans design in the region. They cannot go out of line.
Well, I'd like to look at the other side of things now, Peter, because we do have Muslim countries or groups that, on the other hand, are very much supportive of the Palestinian people, whether we look at what is happening from the Yemeni people, or we look at Hezbollah, or we look at some of the Iraqis or others. I want to talk about that side of things and the importance of what is happening on that side of the coin.
Well, what the Yemenis are doing is incredibly important. Tonight, Netanyahu made an important speech. He faced today massive demonstrations in Tel Aviv. Many Israelis want him to give priority to getting the hostages released rather than his mad plans to crush Hamas. And he acknowledged that there were deep economic problems facing Israel. Now, this is the first time that he has acknowledged these problems, but they are real, and they are caused by the war generally, but most specifically by the blockade operated by Ansar Allah, the Yemeni group. And this has resulted just a few days ago in the Moody's credit agency giving Israel a downgrade, which means that the government will have to pay more money on international money markets to borrow. This is really serious for Israel. Tens of thousands of Israelis are not able to go to their homes in the north and the south. Hundreds of thousands of reserve, military reservists are taken away from their work every week. So this is a factor which is often overlooked. Similarly, the fact that one third of the Israeli army is tied up in the north because of the pressure from Hezbollah. So the Hezbollah and Ansar Allah are basically doing what the Americans won't do, which is put real pressure on Israel to bring this crisis to an end quickly.
And we hope so. And with that, it brings us to the end of the program. I'd like to thank both of you for being with us. I'm Shath, author and West Asia expert out of Belfast. Peter Ford, former British ambassador to Syria out of London. And thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing out for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Goodbye.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أَرْسَلَ رَسُولَهُ بِالْهُدَى
وَدِينِ. It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
وَالَّذِي أَرْسَلَ رَسُولَهُ بِالْهُدَى وَدِينِ الْحَقِّ لِيُظْهِرَهُ عَلَى الدِّينِ كُلِّهِ وَلَوْ كَرِهَ الْمُشْرِكُونَ.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزایی لازم نیست.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslims major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran. Quran.
کتاب الله.
Path towards enlightenment.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam and welcome to our latest episode of Path Towards Enlightenment, which is an endeavor to make you and us familiar with an easy and fluent explanation of God's final scripture to all mankind, the Noble Quran, that was revealed to the last and greatest of all messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. We are currently in the process of explanation of Surah Jin, number 72, in the serial order of compilation of the Noble Quran. It was revealed in Mecca and has 28 ayahs. The title of the surah indicates that it mainly treats a species of creatures invisible to the human eye, and hence called jinn, endowed with some sort of intelligence and the moral choice to discern good from evil. The jinn have believers and disbelievers amongst them. They were acquainted with the prophets of the past and the previously revealed heavenly scriptures. With the start of the universal mission of Islam, it became incumbent upon them, similar to the human race, to believe in the message entrusted by God Almighty to the mercy unto the whole creation, that is, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. They shall be rewarded or punished according to their specific deeds. The surah ends with ayahs referring to the Almighty Creator's knowledge of the unseen, that is, unknown to all beings. We start from where we left you last week, and here are ayahs 16 and 17.
وَأَن لَّوِ اسْتَقَامُوا عَلَى الطَّرِيقَةِ لَأَسْقَيْنَاهُم مَّاءً غَدَقًا لِّنَفْتِنَهُمْ فِيهِ وَمَن يُعْرِضْ عَن ذِكْرِ رَبِّهِ يَسْلُكْهُ عَذَابًا صَعَدًا.
And if they, the people, are steadfast on the path of Allah, we shall provide them with abundant water, so that we may test them therein. And whoever turns away from the remembrance of his Lord, he will let him into an escalating punishment. If you might recall, in our explanation of the previous ayahs of this surah last Friday, we said the Almighty Creator has granted free will to both mankind and jinn to differentiate between good and evil. Hence, some have embraced the truth of Islam, while others have splintered into several sects. We also said that the entire universe is the creation of Allah, and so none can escape what the All-Wise Creator has decreed, since the eventual fate of everyone depends on his or her deeds, with eternal bliss for the righteous and everlasting punishment for the disbelievers, oppressors, and the wicked. The ayahs that we recited to you now mean to say that the reward for those who believe and are steadfast on the right path is abundant blessings. Water is one of the greatest signs of divine mercy, since it is the elixir of life, and wherever there is abundant water, the various bounties of God Almighty are evident in the form of thriving agriculture, pastures for domesticated animals, hydroelectric power for industries, pleasant climate, and many other benefits. In explanation of Ayah 16, the Prophet's 16th infallible heir, Imam Ja'far Sadiq, peace upon him, has said, water also stands for knowledge and for those who firmly adhere to the velayat, or divine decreed authority of the Ahlul Bayt, are granted knowledge in abundance. Abundance of bounties are a form of divine test to determine the degree of faith or the lack of it, as is clear by Ayah 17, which is a warning against vanity, ingratitude, negligence in the performance of obligations, and disobedience of God Almighty, which could lead to severe punishment. These ayahs teach us that, number one, steadfastness on the right path leads to abundance of bounties, both in the transient life of the mortal world and in the eternity of afterlife. Number two, ingratitude, negligence of duties, and disobedience of divine commandments results in misery in life and punishment in the hereafter. And number three, God Almighty tests mankind, both believers and disbelievers, with either abundance or lack of bounties. Now let us listen to ayahs 18 and 19 of the same surah.
وَأَنَّ الْمَسَاجِدَ لِلَّهِ فَلَا تَدْعُوا مَعَ اللَّهِ أَحَدًا وَأَنَّهُ لَمَّا قَامَ عَبْدُ اللَّهِ يَدْعُوهُ كَادُوا يَكُونُونَ عَلَيْهِ لِبَدًا.
And the places of worship belong to Allah, so do not invoke anyone along with Allah. And when the servant of Allah, the Prophet of Islam, rose to pray to him, the Almighty Creator, they almost crowded around him. These ayahs reaffirm monotheism in its perfect sense and are a stern warning against polytheism or associating others, whether idols or imaginary figures, with the one and only Creator, who has no need of any helper or assistant. According to Imam Ja'far Sadiq, peace upon him, Muslims are warned against disrespecting places of worship, as the Jews and the Christians had done in synagogues and churches by ascribing partners to the Almighty Creator. If the former call themselves children of God, the latter worship the Trinity, while the pagan Arabs had turned into an idol house Abraham's edifice of monotheism, that is the Holy Kaaba. Intercession by the command of God is not forbidden, since the prophets and imams are divinely appointed and are thus revered as means to attain divine proximity rather than being objects of worship. Ayah 19 refers to the attempts of the pagan Arabs in Mecca to crowd around the Prophet and make noises when he used to stand for prayers in order to prevent the people from listening to his recitation of ayahs of the Noble Quran and phrases of God's monotheistic majesty. These ayahs teach us the following points. Number one, places of worship in Islam, or more properly mosques, where the believers prostrate to the Almighty God, should not be polluted and turned into centers of polytheism by invoking other than the one and only Creator or by setting up idols and pictures there. Number two, intercession with Allah's chosen servants, such as the prophets and the imams, is not a form of polytheism, as some ignorant persons allege, since these emissaries of God are revered rather than being worshipped. Number three, the most humble part of the ritual prayer is sajdah, or prostration to God, the Omnipresent, and hence the place of worship in Islam is called masjid. And number four, the Prophet of Islam is the most dedicated servant of Allah, and it was the habit of the pagan Arabs of Mecca to crowd around him and make noises when he stood for performing the ritual prayer, so that the people should not listen to his dynamic description of monotheism and words of wisdom. In conclusion of this week's episode of Path Towards Enlightenment, here are ayahs 20, 21, and 22 of Surah Jin.
قُلْ إِنَّمَا أَدْعُو رَبِّي وَلَا أُشْرِكُ بِهِ أَحَدًا قُلْ إِنِّي لَا أَمْلِكُ لَكُمْ ضَرًّا وَلَا رَشَدًا قُلْ إِنِّي لَنْ يُجِيرَنِي مِنَ اللَّهِ أَحَدٌ وَلَنْ أَجِدَ مِنْ دُونِهِ مُلْتَحَدًا.
Say, O Prophet, to the polytheists, I pray only to my Lord, and I do not ascribe any partner to him. Say, indeed, I have no power to bring you any harm or good of my own accord. Say, indeed, no one can protect me from Allah, nor can I find any refuge other than Him. In these ayahs, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, is commanded to affirm the pillars of monotheism by performing the ritual prayer in the correct way and telling the pagan Arabs that only the unseen but omnipresent God is being worshipped and no one else are being invoked. The Prophet is further commanded to say that, as a human being, he has no power by himself to bring any benefit or cause any harm other than what God has bestowed upon him and entrusted to him, the universal mission of Islam for guidance of mankind and jinn. Ayah 22 means to say that no one can protect anybody from divine wrath, which is the result of sins and disobedience of God, who alone is the supreme shelter and refuge. From these ayahs we learn that, number one, the prophets and imams have been granted infallibility by God in view of their sincere most servitude to him, and thus do not invoke anyone else or anything except the Almighty Creator. Number two, whatever power the Prophet possesses is bestowed by God. And number three, all are equal before divine law, and no one, not even the prophets, are immune from God, who is the ultimate shelter and refuge.
Saint of the soil, from the blood and the ashes, it speaks with me the sound of the rain, from the battle and the victory.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.